Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 2nd of December. Vitamin D and calcium, this hour of the program. As you probably are aware, people have been buying vitamin D in huge numbers the last couple years after there have been some reports saying that it's good for your heart, it may be a cancer preventative, and it may contribute to lessening the risk of diabetes, etc. Well, a major study has been done by the Institute of Medicine, which is an independent nonprofit organization connected to the National Academy of Science. Their report released this week, and it shows that most of us may be getting sufficient amount of vitamin D and calcium, and we're getting it without supplements, which means that we're getting it in the food that we eat. One of the members of the panel that looked through well over 1,000 studies on vitamin D is with us this hour, Dr. Clifford Rosen, director of the Center for Clinical and Translational Research at the Maine Medical Center. He was one of the committee members on that Institute of Medicine's report, Dietary Reference Intakes for Calcium and Vitamin D, and he is a bone specialist. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Dr. Rosen. And our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Dr. Rosen, hello. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. Nice to see you.
Yeah.
And my regards to the Badger team. All my friends that are Wisconsin fans are told me to say hi.
Well, hello back to all of your friends, too. And thanks for being with us. Now, this was the first really thorough examination of vitamin D and calcium since 1997?
Right. The last report was in 1997. There's been an astonishing growth in the number of studies done in looking at vitamin D and calcium, particularly randomized trials, actual formal studies testing in a number of different age groups, the effects of calcium and vitamin D on the skeleton.
So you looked over, you and the committee, well over 1,000 different studies.
Yes, that's correct. And we really poured through them. The government had commissioned two previous reviews of the literature. They're called meta-analyses. One was done in Canada, and one was done at Tufts in Boston. And they were extremely comprehensive. And both of those concluded that there was really very weak associations between vitamin D and other disorders that you had mentioned at the top of the show. But in terms of skeletal health, there was an inkling that there was a relationship. And, of course, with our studies and overviewing the newer work since that time, we really felt strongly that we could recommend calcium and vitamin D or healthy bone protection at the levels that we had noted.
The commission was commissioned by the Canadian government and the United States.
That's correct. I think it was a mutual effort, and it was funded only by government money. There were no private funds involved, and it was a 2-year process. And
wow.
Dr. DeLuca at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, one of the pioneers in vitamin D, was a consultant to our group, and we used him extensively since he is in the National Academy of Sciences and is one of the premier people in the vitamin D field.
Now, you used to be a doctor who thought that vitamin D might be beneficial in warding off other diseases?
Well, I always had a little skepticism about vitamin D and other diseases, but I was strongly recommending it to all my patients and the people that I talked to. In fact, just yesterday, one of the scientists at Jackson Lab sent me an email and said, "You told me to take 1,000 units of vitamin D a day to protect your bone health." And I wrote back and I said, "It's just like the science that you do. Everything evolves over time. That was 3 years ago. Sorry. But we now have more evidence." So, you know, I think it's an evolution, just like everything else. We learn more as we go on. And I think the biggest thing that's happened in the field, and it's happened in every field, and that's why we have so much more health news than we used to have, is because we're doing much more sophisticated studies, and we have a much better way to analyze lots of data.
There are some who have looked at your conclusions and said, this is evolution. It's evolving all the time. There are studies being done right now on heart disease and some other kinds of illnesses, and maybe we ought to wait till some of those are done.
Right. Well, we can continue to wait as long because they're going to go on for a long time. And I think people were looking for some guidance and some recommendations. That's not to say that we won't change the next time we take a look at this, or that there'll be more presumptive evidence that we could then support, for example, its effect on heart disease or on colon cancer. There certainly are signals in the literature. There are hints that it may be effective in other diseases. But the evidence, the level of evidence, did not reach a point where we could make a conclusion about that, a definitive conclusion to recommend to the general population. I think what people sometimes forget is that this committee was really designed to provide widespread guidance for the healthy population for dietary reference intakes. But there are exclusions. There are people who are at risk that need more vitamin D, and certainly patients who have osteoporosis probably need more vitamin D to protect their bones. So this is a more global perspective, talking about population rather than patients. Specific indication.
As you well know, we're all susceptible to advice that we've heard or we've heard from somebody that you need to do certain things. I don't even know how long it's been, but when I walk the dog, if it's not below zero, I really do turn around and face the sun and take my glasses off and try to take in some of the sun. Is that absolutely goofy?
You know, it's not goofy. Well, number one, I also walk the dog. But generally, when I do it in the morning, it's still dark in the winter. but if you're out in the middle of winter in Madison or Milwaukee, you're not getting much production of vitamin D in the skin. In the summer, you're getting a ton, and you only need 10-minute exposure. And you do store some vitamin D in the skin, in fat tissue, once it's produced in the skin. So what you can get in the summer, you can store some of it up. And in fact, we looked at some very interesting studies in above the Arctic Circle in individuals who clearly were getting no sun exposure at night, and some or during the day, and some individuals in Antarctica. And yet they were still able to have adequate levels of vitamin D, in part because some of it was stored in their body.
Oh.
So keep turning to the sun. It's all right. You probably have a little production of vitamin D from the skin, but you have a lot more. It's about 10 to 100 times more during the summer.
So those people in the Arctic Circle eat a lot of fish? Is it in fish?
Well, so that was the thing. We were very intrigued by this because, you know, it was a Canadian-funded study as well. And we like to pay a lot of attention to our neighbors. So First Nations and Inuits that are dark-skinned tend to produce a little less vitamin D than do Caucasians. Yet they were still able to maintain nearly adequate vitamin D levels. And the interesting thing about those individuals is their diet's changing. They used to have fish and whale and, you know, fat and cod liver, you know, and that was really a lot of their diet. So their vitamin D levels were really quite high. Now they've been introduced to some Western foods and fat and material that isn't quite as enriched in vitamin D. And so they're changing a bit. And so we have to pay attention to that group as well because their vitamin D levels may not be as adequate because they're not getting as much in their diet.
So what does vitamin D do for us?
So it's a great question. And I think the major thing it does, and the thing it's been established, is that it promotes calcium absorption in the small intestine. So if you take calcium, so you go out and buy Caltrate, for example, or any calcium product, I just mentioned that, and you take it, only about 10% of that would be absorbed if you didn't have vitamin D. But if you took Caltrate and took vitamin D, 40% would be absorbed. And it's the same thing with calcium in the food. You can eat all the ice cream till the cows come home, but you won't absorb much of it unless you have vitamin D. So it's essential for maintenance of absorption of calcium, and it's very important to mineralize the bone. So bone, believe it or not, is actually made up of a lot of proteins. It gets its hardness from the mineralization, the calcium that's deposited, and you have to have vitamin D to do that. So those are the two major roles. Now, interestingly enough, the receptor for vitamin D is present in many, many tissues, and that's why people ask, Can it protect against heart disease? Can it protect against dementia? Can it protect against cancer? All because the vitamin D receptor is present, which means vitamin D is working in those tissues. And what we need to find out is whether or not enough vitamin D that you can take in your diet is going to have any effect on those other tissues.
Let's welcome phone calls. Our guest this hour, we're talking about vitamin D, and the panel also looked at calcium intake. Dr. Clifford Rosen, director of the Center for Clinical and Translational Research, Maine Medical Center. He is a bone specialist, and he was on the committee that released the report this week that's been getting a lot of attention. It's the Institute of Medicine's report, Dietary Reference Intakes for Calcium and Vitamin D. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, and we start our calls with Ben from McHenry County, Illinois. Hello,
hello.
Ben. Hi.
Hi. My name is Ben. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a neurologist in Illinois, and over the last couple of years, since vitamin D has been getting so much play in the literature, I've been checking levels on my patients, and it seems to be a very rare person who in this area that has a level of 30 or more. My lab says that 30 is the lower limit of normal. And some of these people are coming in taking 1,000 or 2,000 units of vitamin D per day. So the question I have is, what's the right dose for those people?
Thanks. Can I answer?
Oh, of course.
So thanks, Ben, for the note. So, you know, our report looked very closely at the threshold level, 20 or 30. And, you know, as you said absolutely correctly, almost all the reference labs are defining deficiency as less than 30. What we found is when we looked at the data, 20 is equivalent to 30 in terms of giving you skeletal protection. So, and we found that there was no difference between 20 and 30 in terms of optimal absorption of calcium or protection of the bones. So we recommend that everybody get to 20. And I would say that your observation is absolutely correct. Many, many people will not get to 30, and that's why the estimates in a lot of the literature, medical literature and lay literature, is 70-80% of the individuals are vitamin D deficient. That's based on a level of 30. And as it turns out, 30 is really too high, and we think all you need to do is get to 20. And so I would agree with you that that would be the right observation. Now, the question is, how do you get there? So it depends on their baseline level. So if they start at 10 and you're giving them vitamin D supplementation, you can expect that for every 100 units of vitamin D that you'd have an increase of about 1 nanogram per ml. But if you start at, like, say, 25, Ben, your increase will be much less than that. So the body has this way of sort of protecting itself against too much vitamin D. So the lower they are, the greater the response to vitamin D is. The higher they are, if they're in the 25 to 30 range, you're only going to get a very small bump. And that's probably why some of my patients tell me the same thing. I'm at 25, and I give them 2,000 units a day, and the best I can do is get them to 27 or 28.
Can I ask one other question?
Sure, go ahead, Ben.
Well, actually, two. One is, where did the original 30 as the lower limit of normal come from? And the other question is, how do tanning booths fit into all of this? And I'll take the answer off the air.
All right. Thanks,
Ben.
Thank you.
Okay. So the 30, interestingly enough, we looked at that. That number came from reference labs, and it was based on two studies. One, which suggested that you had to have 30 nanograms to get maximum calcium absorption. And in our report, we found that's not true. There is no difference between 20 and 30. The second thing was that people were saying that in order to suppress parathyroid hormone, which is a hormone that gets upregulated when your calcium levels are low, you had to be at 30. And we showed that that also was not the case. So the labs, the independent labs, increased their levels at the VA, where I'm a physician at the VA. They have done the same thing, and all my patients tell me I'm deficient at 22 or 23. So that's the that's where the 30 came in. Now, your best bet is sunlight, and tanning booths can give you vitamin D if you get the correct X-ray exposure. It's got to be ultraviolet, band B, UVB, we call it, 290 to 315 nanometers on the exposure. And some tanning booths have that particular exposure. Some don't. So it all depends on which tanning booth they're going to.
He mentioned some of his patients were taking 1,000 to 2,000 yes. units. You also looked at the harmful effects of taking too much vitamin D.
Right, right. I think at that level, we were less concerned. But once the blood level goes above 40, then we started to see in some studies a signal that suggested there might be increased risk. So in the Journal of the American Medical Association in July of this year, there was a very important study in Australia where they gave 500,000 units of vitamin D once a year, single pill once a year to their volunteers. And what they found is the blood levels went up above 40 nanograms per ml. But paradoxically, those people who took the vitamin D versus placebo had more fractures and more falls.
Oh.
So, and then we went back and we looked at another very large study, the Baltimore Area Longitudinal Study, that's been reporting for years on aging. And what they told us was that, yes, when the levels are low, the risk of dying was greater. So we know low levels of vitamin D are not good for you. And then around 20, there's no risk, no increased risk. But when you get up above 30, then you start to see this risk increase a bit. Now, we need more data, but this was of concern enough to us that we're trying to get the message out to some people that, some is okay, more is not better, and please don't consider very high dose unless you have a very, very good reason why.
I want to know what kind of vitamin we can take to have the kind of energy and enthusiasm you have. What are you taking, sir?
No, I don't take anything. My level's 39. I'm a runner. I'm 60, and I'm as skinny as a rail. And I think one of the things is that we have forgotten about in our message, and we've been talking about the sort of the post-rollout, what are the things we did right, what are the things we did wrong, because it's a very complicated message. But one of the things, and this is true for Ben's patients as well, is that obesity tends to reduce the blood level of vitamin D. So getting people lean and in terms of a good body weight will help their vitamin D. So eating well means not only eating fish and all the milk and stuff that a lot of times people can't do, but also keeping their body at ideal body weight, because the more obese you are, the lower your blood level of vitamin D. And that's one of the strongest predictors of levels of vitamin D is your body mass index.
Dr. Clifford Rosen, our guest, we're looking at vitamin D and the major study that came out that was released just a couple days ago. Our number is 800-486-8655, and we have a ton of phone calls we'll get to momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, we were all a-Twitter about this in the office yesterday. Science fans are awaiting an announcement from NASA's astrobiology team that's happening this afternoon at 1 o'clock. And it is probably going to be about the fact that NASA has discovered a chemical model for life that is based on something other than oxygen and water, which is quite an exciting finding. We don't know what it's going to be. We had hoped, though, that it was going to be a perfectly peaceful and highly intelligent ET. It doesn't look as though that will be possible. Darn, it would have been such a nice Christmas surprise for everybody. But we're going to be talking with two great people. Chris Lintott is a postdoctoral researcher in the Department of Physics at the University of Oxford, co-founder of Galaxy Zoo and Zooniverse, and he is highly intelligent. He'll get you so excited about the stars and NASA and becoming involved in science. And then Frank Kovac is going to join us as well. Frank is the creator and director of the Kovac Planetarium near Rhinelander, Wisconsin. He works in a paper mill. It has been his great desire to run a planetarium, and he has spent 15 years of his life building this planetarium. We want to give him some business. It's his great passion in life, and he was featured on CBS News a couple days ago, and I said, we got to get this guy on. He's from Wisconsin, and what a thing he's done. So that's coming up, hour number two. Vitamin D this hour. Let's return to phone calls, and we go next to Elizabeth from Shorewood. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thank you for taking my call. Doctor, I am 76 years old. I had an antrectomy when I was about 35. I've had, an ancient history of gastric problems. Parenthetically, on Monday I got a positive result on that I have celiac disease, presumably. Wow. That is some explanation. But in the meanwhile, I had severe anemia.
Yes.
From malabsorption.
Yes.
So a couple of years ago, my doctor had put me, my vitamin D levels were around zero.
Yeah.
So my doctor gave me 50,000 milligrams once a week. I read in apart from that, just reading up on anemia, that vitamin D, large doses of vitamin D, are used to treat anemia in kidney disease. I mentioned that to my doctor. He said, that's kidney disease. Well, my thinking was, does my vitamin D really know the difference between my kidney disease or my malabsorption? I increased the dose, and I was having to have iron infusions every 3-4 months. Just to keep a decent level and iron stores. So after increasing the dose, I stopped being anemic, and that's been over a year and a half or so that my levels are perfectly healthy. Now I'm still taking the vitamin I'm taking vitamin 50 D. milligrams every 5 days, but now what you say gives me a pause. In that regard, my levels, I can't remember what my last levels would be, not alarming.
Yeah.
They're higher than 40.
No, I think, Elizabeth, that you, first of all, you have a very good doctor, whoever it is, or a group of doctors, because the anemia was due to iron deficiency, which was related to malabsorption. You should continue to take the vitamin D because you're not one of the healthy people we targeted. I apologize for saying that, but when we talk about population-based recommendations, we're talking about general population. You've had half your stomach out, and you have SPRU, so you're not absorbing calcium or vitamin D well. You need that vitamin D. So don't stop taking it. You need to keep taking it.
Thanks very much, Elizabeth, for your call. And we go to Joey from Milwaukee. Hi, Joey.
Hi there. How are you this morning?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. My question has to do with the other uses of calcium in the body. So I know that a lot of times when we talk about, making sure you get enough calcium, we talk a lot about a lot of that going to your bones. And but I do know that oftentimes calcium ions are essential in, say, neurons and muscles. And I was wondering if you could comment a bit about vitamin D and calcium absorption, increasing levels of calcium in the body and how that affects things like neurons and muscles.
Well, that's a great question. So there's no doubt your muscles need calcium to work. The contraction of muscles require calcium. So I think that that's really essential. And neurons, the transmission of those messages require calcium. In fact, all of our body, everything we do requires calcium. The cells absolutely have to have calcium come into their nucleus and cytoplasm in order to have essential functions. So it is really important. That comes from the circulation, basically. And that's why it's so tightly controlled. So we have several hormones, including vitamin D, that are absolutely essential to help you maintain a normal calcium. And we never talk about abnormal calcium levels, really, because everybody's able to protect their body against low calcium because we have this unending source of calcium, and that is our skeleton. So what happens is, if I were to deprive you, for example, at 6 weeks, take you into my clinic here and not give you any calcium or vitamin D for 6 weeks, your blood calcium would stay normal because your body would be taking the calcium out of your bones. And that's one of the reasons why vitamin D and calcium are so important for the skeleton, because it's allowing the skeleton to keep its calcium and not have it go into the bloodstream.
Oh, thanks, Joey. So many people seem to have had their vitamin D tested. I don't think I've ever had that done. Is this a normal part of a physical? Or
you shouldn't have it done.
Really?
Getting outside with your dog. So Mayo Clinic, 4 million tests a year.
Whoa.
Vitamin D. Just Mayo Clinic. 4 million tests a year. Some of those assays cost $150 each. So when you think about it, there's been in the past 5 years, the number of vitamin D tests has gone up tenfold measurements. Why? Because everybody's heard all the good news about vitamin D, and they got to measure it in their patients. And because everybody thinks it's so safe, they've recommended vitamin D. You know, we all like numbers, like our cholesterol and our blood sugar. And so having a vitamin D number is the in thing to do. Now, is this correct? Well, we're saying, look, most people have normal numbers. So why should everybody get a test? My wife went in for her annual physical last year, new doctor, and she immediately said, you got to get a vitamin D level and you have to take 1,000 units a day. She's a runner, she's 58, and she's postmenopausal, and she said, what should I do? And I said, don't do it. and it caused a little bit of irritation because I said, my doctor said to do it.
Right.
And I said, there's no evidence. I mean, that's the problem, is we're spending lots of money to find out what these levels are, and the vast majority of the people are normal.
Yeah. We go to Kamar from Manitowoc. Hi, Kamar.
Yes, hi. I think partially my question was just addressed, but I will still ask this, that the recommendation, what you were saying, giving the example of your wife, that normally people should not check their vitamin D level.
That's
having
correct.
Said that, then who would decide if they are considered normal, otherwise healthy people that need vitamin D or not?
Great question.
The second part of the question is that the vitamin D level, even though it is still the disagreement between 20 nanogram and 30, would be variable from the geographical viewpoint, people in Africa population versus North America.
Okay, so let me answer the second part first. Absolutely no question that African Americans, dark-skinned individuals, First Nation people, are going to have lower vitamin D. So they're going to be in the 18 to 22 range. There's no question about it. So they are a little lower, and that has to be considered. But some of the data, when trials were done, when they were given vitamin D to African Americans, their risk did not get better when they rose, when their vitamin D levels were raised. So I think that's of concern. In fact, there was some increased risk as you rose the levels from, let's say, 18 or 20 up to 35. So yes, they're going to be a little lower, but their bones are already at less risk. So dark-skinned individuals tend to have better bone density. So in answer to your first question, who should get screened, that's a really important question. And I would argue that probably individuals, everybody who has osteoporosis should have at least one vitamin D level or low bone density. Or if they're on treatment for osteoporosis, they certainly should have should have their vitamin D measured. Some individuals that have musculoskeletal pain and have had some symptoms of osteoporosis might consider, or if they've had a fracture, they certainly should have their vitamin D levels done. Beyond that, I'm a little concerned about screening lots of people. Certainly, one thing we do know, and I need to make this point clear to everybody, is individuals over 70 years of age tend to have lower levels. So those people should definitely be screened, especially if they're not going outside and they're institutionalized, because the vast majority of those individuals have low levels. Some have very low levels, and that needs to be corrected.
Thanks, Kmart, for the call. Here's an email that has come in. I'm a 69-year-old woman who has had 16 basal cell skin cancers removed. My dermatologist has recommended 1,000 IUs of vitamin D daily, believes it's useful for protection against these skin cancers. I'm not taking it for my bones. I will speak to my dermatologist about this, but would like your opinion, Dr. Rosen, about the use of vitamin D for skin cancer.
Yeah, so, you know, that's very controversial. So the whole issue is, you know, does the sun cause skin cancers? And the answer is, yes, it probably does. Excess exposure does. And yet we're saying you need to have some exposure. And I think the whole thing is moderation. Whether oral vitamin D can protect against skin cancer is a whole different story. That's what she's asking. And I think the answer is we don't know. But in her situation at 69, I would say 1,000 units of vitamin D is probably a reasonable thing to do, especially if she's afraid to go outside because of her previous skin cancers.
Yeah, why don't we know whether it's protective?
Well, you know, there hasn't been actually a trial. To do a trial, Kevin, you would have to spend at least 10 years randomizing people to get enough people to show whether the vitamin D protected against skin cancer. And, of course, a lot of the skin cancer that occurs from exposure that had happened many years before. So it would be a very difficult trial.
Let's go next to Joe in Wilson. Hi, Joe.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. One is I take 400 units of vitamin D a day, but I also drink unpasteurized milk. And the second question is I cook at a small school, and would changing to cook with soybean oil be better than using the canola oils and whatnot?
Great question. So I think if you're drinking unpasteurized milk, that taking 400 units is a very reasonable approach. And, you know, we looked at the vast majority of Americans are getting their dietary needs met, but some of them are getting it through supplements, and you're doing exactly that. So I think, Joe, you're really doing the right thing. There may be some benefit to doing soy oils. They do have more vitamin D, so that is something to consider versus canola oil.
Hmm. Thanks, Joe. Lou in Rosendale. Hi.
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 I have a question concern. I'm 72 years old and do have mild osteoporosis, and I'm concerned about the connection between calcium vitamin D supplements and alendronate, and the recent concern about alendronate causing femur fractures and disintegration of the jawbone.
Right.
And my teeth have actually started getting farther apart. I have really good teeth and no dental issues other than that I've noticed the last couple of years. I've been on alendronate for probably 10 to 15 years.
And what is that for, Lou? Alendronate?
Osteoporosis, right?
Oh, okay.
So your question is, what do we do about that? So, Lou, I think you should talk, you know, this is what I do for a living. I'm not trying to tell you what to do, but I will give you some friendly advice. It's time to talk to your physician about whether you've had enough alendronate or not. If you haven't had any fractures and you're doing fine, maybe it's time to take a holiday, which is now what most people are recommending because of those other risks. Now, in terms of calcium and vitamin D, in your situation, you know, we are recommending up to 800 units a day for individuals in your age group. So I'm very comfortable with you taking 1,000 units of vitamin D and 1,000 milligrams of calcium a day. So you're doing the right thing. But I would suggest you talk to your physician because we're recommending, and I'm a bone specialist, and I do this all the time, and I've seen some of the bad complications of long-term therapy. It doesn't happen very often because alendronate's a great drug, but we've said, look, time to take a break. This stuff is in your bones for a long time.
Hmm. Thanks, Lou. Let's go to John in Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Hi. I go in the sun a lot, but I burn easily, so I always use sunscreen, and I was wondering, how does sunscreen affect the absorption of vitamin D?
Great question. Generally, over 15 on the sunscreen, no production of vitamin D. So it is a very effective blocker if you're applying it everywhere. Now, if you're out in the sun and your hands are not covered, you're going to get production of vitamin D. So it depends on where the exposure is and for how long. But our general recommendation for you in Wisconsin is 10 minutes in the summer is plenty for producing vitamin D.
And thank you for the call. Here's another email. This one from Sally. I'm in my 60s. My vitamin D level was recently tested as 49. Don't eat cheese. Do drink milk. Eat lots of fruit and veggies. Take a calcium supplement with vitamin D recommended by my doctor. I have no osteoporosis. You're saying the number is too high. What will be a negative effect on me? And should I give up the supplement and try to reduce this number?
Yeah, I don't know what her supplement number, you know, how much she's taking. So that's a question. But I would recommend, you know, 49 is sort of borderline for us. Long term, we're worried at that level when you've been doing it for 10 or 15 years. But short term, I don't think it's an issue. But I would say, look, the better part of valor is just to stop taking it for a while and maybe even have your vitamin D level rechecked. The bottom line is she's very healthy at this level, and I probably would say, look, you know, you just don't need to do anything else.
Bonnie in New London. Hi, Bonnie.
Morning. Thank you. How important is it to take magnesium as a supplement for bone health?
So that's a great question, and a lot of people ask me that in my practice. I do not generally recommend it. I think virtually everybody is magnesium sufficient, and we found no evidence that it was helpful in bone health.
Thank you for the call. I'm still wondering, Dr. Rosen, how did we get to the point where we have this vitamin D craze? The sales have been up.
It's a great question. That is really what we're trying to figure out. In the past 5 years, there has been an explosion in the literature, on the internet, and I think it's partially because people think it's benign and you can take it and it's easy and it's safe. And again, this idea that we're very fixated on numbers, so we need to have a certain number. And so if you measure it and then you can get to that number, you're reassured that you're going to be healthy. And there's been a lot out there about vitamin D having so many positive effects. I think the other thing is, and I hate to say this because I didn't realize it until the report rolled out, there's tremendous pressure from industry that produce vitamin D as supplements. I mean, I didn't recognize how much is at stake in this report because almost everybody's doing some sort of supplement or getting their vitamin D tested, and it's being driven by, part of it is driven by those factors.
Huh. Dr. Clifford Rosen, director of the Center for Clinical and Translational Research, the Maine Medical Center. He was on the expert panel on the Institute of Medicine that looked at vitamin D and calcium. They just issued their report this week, Dietary Reference Intakes for Calcium and Vitamin D. 800-486-8655. The email, if you want to use that, talk@WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program, NASA is having a news conference today, and the blogosphere has been all abuzz about what in the world are they going to talk about. They are going to announce that extraterrestrial life, the process for finding that has become easier because of what they've found. We just don't know what they've found. We have two great guests with us. We also have Frank Kovac, the creator and director of the Kovac Planetarium near Rhinelander, Wisconsin. This guy built this in his backyard. It took 15 years to accomplish it, and it's quite a beautiful thing. So that's coming up, hour number two. We'll have some fun. Jason in La Crosse, hello.
Hi, this is my name is Jason. I greatly appreciate the programming. I have a 5-year-old little girl that she's been taking vitamin D and C supplements for the past 2 years, and I'm just wondering how do I determine, you know, if I'm doing long-term damage to my child?
Well, that's a great question, Jason. And actually, I think that's a situation where is she getting outside in the sun?
Yes, of course. We're very active outside, drinks a lot of milk, loves cheese, of course.
So if she's only taking a small supplement, like 400 units a day, that will not harm her at all, and it's probably good for her bones. This is a time when she's growing. But if you're concerned that she's taking much higher doses of supplement, it might be worthwhile to check a blood level and just find out. But I think, you know, in the normal course of a 200-unit or a 400-unit or even a 600-unit supplement for growing kids, I think you're doing fine. As long as she's getting outside and staying fit, that's the key thing, staying fit.
Absolutely. And you're totally right about the marketing scheme, because you go into any store into the supplement aisle, and they greatly, you know, 6 to 1,000 milligrams for people. It's just insane. But I appreciate the programming. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Jason. Karen is next in Green Bay. Hi, Karen.
Hi. How are you today?
Fine. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Last year, I was diagnosed with vitamin D deficiency. My number came back, I think it was like 12 or 13.
Okay.
And my doctor put me on 50,000-unit tablets once a week for 6 weeks, and then I took 5,000-unit tablets daily, and was rechecked this year. It was at 40. Mm-hmm. Should I still continue on 50,000 units?
He did the right thing. It's exactly what I would have done. 6 weeks at 50,000 units once a week, right? And that's exactly right. Did he find out why? Was there anything contributing to the low level that he said?
No.
Okay.
No.
So I don't think you need. Now, what I would do is just come back, drop back to 800 or 1,000 units a day, because you've got plenty in your system now.
Okay.
And I think, you know, you're in good shape. I wouldn't worry, but I don't think you need to take 5,000 a day now.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. Another email, Susan in Janesville. I've heard that consuming high levels of meat can negatively affect bone metabolism. Is this true? If so, what's the underlying mechanism?
Great question. Not true.
All right.
Well, we thought for a long time that excess protein could cause calcium loss in the urine. So that was the presumed mechanism. But there's some very recent studies from Yale where they actually did a randomized trial of high protein versus low protein and looked at calcium balance by giving radioactive calcium to subjects and measuring where it went and how it did. No truth that high protein causes calcium loss.
Hmm. Heidi in Toma. Hi.
Hi. My question, my mom goes to a chiropractor, and my chiropractor was telling her that people in the Midwest, in Wisconsin, Minnesota mainly, have lower levels of vitamin D, which I know you've already addressed.
Yeah,
but she said that with the lower vitamin D levels, there was an increase in depression, and that if she took between 3,000 and 5,000 units of vitamin D daily, it would help her depression. Has there been any research in that?
Yes. So did it help her depression? That's the question, Heidi.
I think she's only just recently started in probably the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, so there's no question that if you measure vitamin D in the winter in Maine, and we did many studies on this a decade ago, or in Wisconsin, you're going to find lower levels in the winter in the Midwest than you would down in, you know, the Southwest, for example. And it has been caught in some studies linked to seasonal affective disorder, but the trials don't support the use of large doses of vitamin D to reduce or prevent depression. So I would say, you know, if her levels are low, taking some vitamin D is important, but I wouldn't hang my hat on it as a way to treat depression.
Thank you, Heidi. Joan, Milwaukee. Hi. Hello, Joan. Yep, Joan isn't there. We go to Margaret in Sister Bay. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I am a long time, a 23-and-a-half-year autologous bone marrow transplant with monoclonal antibodies survivor. And
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you to DFCI. Anyway, I wonder about my levels. I've been on Oscal D for many, many years, and my oncologist in the Chicago area recently upped my dosage on both my husband and mine on vitamin D, and we're now taking a supplement besides that. Given the fact that I had 40 minutes twice a day for 3 days running of TBI, what does that play in it?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure we know. You know, the studies haven't been done. To TBI, total body irradiation, you're referring to? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So, I don't think the data's in there. I would say that taking an Oscal supplement's very important for you. Your bones are probably thinner than anybody else's because of the TBI to begin with. Whether that affects vitamin D is not clear, but the point is he's doing the right thing. I think
okay,
for you, supplementation's really important.
1,000 a day.
I'm sorry, we missed it.
1,000? Yeah. That's very appropriate.
2,000 a day?
1 to 2,000 a day. I mean, I think it depends on what your level would be, but I don't know
if it's been tested.
It has been tested, and it's fine.
No, I'm saying I don't know if my level has been tested.
Well, it's worth having it tested just to see.
Thanks, Margaret, for the call. Andrea, Stevens Point, hi.
Hi. Yes, I am breastfeeding a four-month-old baby, and I know my doctor has recommended the vitamin D drops, about 400.
Yes.
Units until you're, while you're breastfeeding, and I'm just wondering if that's a good idea.
Yes, you have a great doctor. That's absolutely true. So you're doing great things for your baby by breastfeeding, and keep going as long as possible. It's good for your bones, actually. The mothers who breastfeed longer have better bones, which is great news. But the milk that you make doesn't have any vitamin D in it. So that little baby of yours needs that 400 units of vitamin D.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Andrea. Email, can you get vitamin D through sun reflection off of snow or water?
Oh, that's an interesting question. The answer is no. It has to be direct.
All right.
It has to be direct.
Joan is next from Milwaukee now. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I have two questions. First, it's any suggestion for finding a doctor well-versed in malabsorption?
Your best bet. Are you in Milwaukee?
Yes.
Yeah, there are a couple of really good endocrinologists in Milwaukee that you might go to. I would start with an endocrinologist, believe it or not.
Okay. And the second question is if there's a relationship between arthritis and malabsorption of calcium.
Yeah. I think that's less well established. It's true. I'll tell you one thing that happens when your vitamin D levels do get low, you get a lot of musculoskeletal pain. There's no question about it. Whether that's not arthritis. Arthritis is joint pain. But if you're talking about aching in the bones, aching in the muscles, it could be malabsorption. It could be low vitamin D. So
yes, I do have that. I have also been on statin medications for quite a while. Could there be a relationship there?
Yes. Yes. If you have that and you've been on statins, that would be the first thing I'd withdraw from you is the statins, because that may be contributing dramatically to your aching.
Thank you, Joan. Mike in Milwaukee. Hello.
Yeah, do you have to take supplements, or can you drink carrot juice or something in order to maintain levels of vitamin D? Because it sounds to me like you're saying that everybody should be taking a supplement.
Yeah, you don't have to. And what we're saying is most people are meeting their needs. Some people are taking supplements. A lot of people aren't. Carrot juice, if it's supplemented with vitamin D, certainly milk, yogurt, cheese, cereal is now supplemented with vitamin D, orange juice. Salmon is awesome. Lots of vitamin D in salmon. Nuts and soy are rich sources of vitamin D. So I would say to you, no, you don't need to take a supplement. And yes, you can get it from your diet. Tuna fish, another good source.
Now, it had been many years since we had looked at all the literature on vitamin D. Did the committee have recommendations about how often committees should have recommendations?
Right. Well, that's a great question, and I don't know the answer to that. I mean, what happens is the Institute of Medicine is a not-for-profit organization in Washington, and they are composed of experts in a lot of different fields, and they are handed all these issues that the federal government has trouble making specific recommendations about. So, and it's like Homeland Security. They were big in terms of trying on recommendations on bioterrorism. So any scientific problem that seems to be unresolvable, they will hand over to the IOM to do a committee report on. And they're doing reports on almost a monthly basis on lots of different things.
Really?
Yeah. So, for example, they just finished one on women in medicine and what were the problems associated with it. They had a huge report out years ago on medical accidents or things that happen in the hospital. And that report is still, 13 years later, is still one of the most important things that the IOM has produced, that medical errors are a major problem. So they're doing it on a regular basis. Do they get around to this stuff again? I think it's going to be a little while.
Right. Let's take one more quick call. We're almost out of time, but I want to take this. Phyllis in Brookfield. Hi.
Hello. Yes, I am a registered dietitian, and I studied in the 50s. At that time, we were warning people about what we called vitamin D intoxication, since it is an oil-soluble rather than water-soluble vitamin. And I'm wondering if there's any validity to that thought now.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is. This is one of the areas we are concerned about. That's an excellent point. And we're hearing about people taking 10, 15,000 units a day, and that is an issue. So we're concerned about it. Vitamin D intoxication causes kidney problems. It causes high blood calcium, and it can cause calcium deposition in the blood vessels, just what we don't need. So I think it's an issue, and currently the biggest problem with that is people are taking large doses of supplements. So it is a problem. It's reemerged, and it's an issue that we have to deal with.
Dr. Rosen, thanks for being on the committee. Thanks for all of the information you gave us and for your enormous enthusiasm.
Definitely. Thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Good. I'm glad. It was fun for us, too, and informative. Dr. Clifford Rosen, he is director of the Center for Clinical and Translational Research, Maine Medical Center, on the committee of the Institute of Medicine's report released a couple days ago, Dietary Reference Intakes for Calcium and Vitamin D. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. And thank you for all of your interesting calls. More following the news.